What's going on, friend? Thanks for tuning in to the Work Faith Podcast. At Work Faith, we provide faith-based training and coaching for anyone who desires long-term employment. For marketplace leaders looking to grow in thought leadership, this podcast is for you. Our goal of this podcast is to equip you with ideas, leadership skills, and values to help you find true fulfillment in the intersection of work and faith. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Anthony Flynn, and I'm your host. Let's jump right in. Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to another edition of the Work Faith Podcast. And I'm delighted to bring you this episode with a great friend of mine, Josh Kwan. Man, I can't wait to actually have Josh share a little bit about himself. But we're just excited to dive in this week. We're going to be talking about this idea of work actually requiring work. Can you believe that? And so I'm excited to have Josh and I dive in on this topic. But before I do that, let me tell you a little bit about Josh. And I think I met Josh probably, it's been actually about a decade ago or so now. Josh was one of the co-founders of an organization called Praxis. And Josh, forgive me for butchering the ultimate mission, but essentially Praxis helps entrepreneurs who abide in their Christian faith to scale their practices, to scale their ventures so that they can make an impact on the kingdom through business and through nonprofit work. And so that's the synopsis of it. Josh may have a better formal mission statement for Praxis, but we met about a decade ago, and I had the privilege of actually going through the Praxis Accelerator as a nonprofit leader. And I also have the privilege of serving as a venture partner for Praxis. So I still have connections to the organization. Josh currently, however, serves, even though he co-founded Praxis, Josh was blessed to actually move on and become the president and CEO of The Gathering. And so I'm not going to steal Josh's thunder. I'm going to let Josh tell you a little bit more about The Gathering. But let me stop talking and let me welcome my great friend, Josh Kwan. Josh, how's it going, man?
Hey, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's an absolute honor to have you here. And man, it's such a delight. You have an incredibly busy schedule. You're in great demand. And so I consider it an honor to be able to have this time to share with you. And of course, more importantly, have you share some of your life, some of your story with our audience here. So thanks for joining us.
Oh, absolutely. And you mentioned that we've known each other a number of years, and I've really enjoyed watching you sort of really maximize all the gifts and talents and opportunities that God's given you and taking it and run with it. And I don't know how one person can do four or five jobs and raise so many kids and be involved in church. And the reason I came on to this podcast is I really had not that much to share. I have a lot more to learn, how to be really present with family, how to be productive. It's just so hopefully this will be more the Anthony Flynn show than the Josh Kwan interview.
Oh man, Josh, you're, I appreciate you, man. And I always have. So I thank you for those very kind words, man. I just want to dive in and I want to ask you some hard questions around what I think would help impact the lives of our audience. And when I say hard, not necessarily hard for you, but just for some of our viewers out there, they may be struggling with some of these concepts that we talked through today. And so I really think you can add value and support our audience here. So look, many people, they don't want to work, right? Just if I could just dive right in, Josh, the thought of work, actually requiring work, is a very difficult challenge for a lot of people. Just at a high level, when I gave you the topic and the theme, what came to mind for you at a high level? And by the way, I also want you, and this is my fault, I want you to actually spend a little time telling us about The Gathering and the work you currently do as well, if you don't mind.
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to weave that in as we go. I really appreciate you inviting me to just have this dialogue. And I'd say that this is an area that I've struggled with in my life since I was a kid. And what I mean by struggle is that I don't think I really had a healthy sense of this concept of work and why we work and what's the ultimate purpose of work, which then leads to a better understanding of how we do our work. If you understand a purpose or a calling to it, it gives you the right kind of motivations, and it sets the priorities in your life in appropriate priorities and ways. And I guess let me just start from the beginning, which is my work orientation had, and I think it still continues to be traces of this, but I've continued trying to snuff it out, but basically it's this drive for personal glory. I want to be known. I wanted people to know me for my work, for what I've done. And I think when, you know, you and I, we know that we are loved and saved by Jesus. And our purpose then is not necessarily to be known. And that was a hard thing for me, because I was like, oh, like, well, how will people remember Josh Kwan? And the reality is that no one's going to remember Josh Kwan, right? That's not just like simple fact, but it's also like this, it's a bit of a scary concept. It's a bit of a scary concept. And it also says, it says in the scripture you and I share, is like, we live our lives not so that we may be known, but that Christ may be known. Right. And so that took a while for me to, I mean, I always said all the right things, but attended Bible study and went to Sunday school and all the, you know, like I was a professing Christian, but that orientation towards my work didn't mesh with what I said I believed. Yeah.
How has the concept of work evolved for you from childhood? And let me ask the question differently. How did your childhood shape and influence a previous definition of work compared to your current definition of work or your current perspective around work?
I'll say maybe in a positive way, my childhood was wonderful because I was given so many opportunities to just be curious and then explore whatever interested me. And so when I think about raising my own kids, I want them to not necessarily have to be good at certain things, but to develop a sense of curiosity and to pursue that curiosity to the fullest extent that they can. Yeah. So, you know, growing up, I wanted to be all sorts of different things. I wanted to be, I was going to be a nuclear physicist because I really enjoyed studying the atom and what made the universe, the smallest particles in the world, right? And then at some point I was like, oh, maybe I'll be a biomedical engineer. It'd be kind of neat to develop robotic elements to the human body. And so like I would just sort of pick something and I'd study it and learn about it. And then I just sort of was motivated enough to go to a science camp and do something nerdy like that, right? And read books from the library and just sit in for hours, you know, sort of tinkering and doing things. And I realized that that's kind of it was strange, right? Because I think about that's maybe like a totally nerdy, geeky way to grow up. But I think what that gave me in terms of like how it shaped my understanding of work is that work is so much easier, so much more fun when it's an expression of exercising your curiosity.
Sure.
And I've sort of approached my work in that same way. What's driving me to be curious about the world and what parts of the world am I curious about? And so I just sort of pursue things in that direction. There's a, you know, I think there's this tension, I think, in the Christian faith about, so there's a motivation side, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's this, idea that, you know, we are saved by grace. There's nothing you can do. There's absolutely nothing you can do, Anthony or Josh. Like, we can't save ourselves. We're sinful by nature. And yet we also strive for excellence.
Yeah.
Right? We also strive. I mean, like, there's a certain sense that, like, you know, we are to be like Jesus. And well, Jesus is perfect. So how are we going to be, you know, but so we have the standard that we want to achieve. We want to be, we want to have a good reputation in our communities, in our workplaces, so that people will ask us, why is it that you do this way, do things this way? Not because for our own success, and that's a part that's sometimes tough to untangle between my personal success, my glory, and I'm doing something with excellence and hard work and dedication because I'm bringing glory to somebody else, my Savior.
You know, Josh, one of the things I've always admired about you, and I guess I've never explicitly told you this, is how, so one thing I wanted you to give, if you can, a brief perspective or synopsis around, you know, your faith journey, but tying it to this specifically, and this is what I haven't necessarily explicitly said to you, I've appreciated the fact that you went to two of what could be considered, you know, the top universities in the world, right? So Harvard undergrad, then of course you did your MBA at Kellogg. I mean, Harvard is arguably the most prestigious university in the world, depending upon which, you know, survey you look at, which magazine, which publishing company, but also Kellogg being, you know, certainly a top three MBA on any given day, is the number one MBA program in the world, right? So you attended those institutions, but one, you have kept just an incredible humility, which I absolutely adore and admire about you. But then two, man, you have maintained not just the fabric of your Christian faith, but you're so deliberate about living out your faith on a daily basis. Talk a little bit about that journey and how, even through being shaped in those institutions that are known to be more liberal in their perspective, how you manage to maintain conservatism around your faith, and how you have continued to really just lean into your faith so deliberately and so diligently.
Yeah, thanks, Anthony. What I really gained from going to those kinds of institutions, and I think they're similar institutions all throughout the country, where you're placed in situations and scenarios where maybe the assumption is not that faith is the answer, that maybe rationality, intelligence, personal, you know, sort of human innovation is the solution to progress in the world, and that base assumption is different from our worldview, right? And I think when you get tested, you can't stand alone, right? Like there's this, you know, the comparison is like when you're just one blade of grass, one strand of a piece of hay, it's so easy to be blown off by the wind. But when you tie a whole bundle together, you gain strength in community, you gain strength by being with friends. And I think that's what you need to do, is to surround yourself with people who, you know, they will give you enough challenge to push you and call you out on the things that you need to change and improve on. But then also they're just there to stand with you, next to you, in the midst of hardship or in the midst of a world that doesn't necessarily appreciate or understand or really take stock of the value of faith. So I think that's been so important to me, to have friendships with fellow believers.
And talk a little bit about how, I'm not trying to make this about those institutions. I want to be clear, but I want to emphasize how you have, again, I know you, I know your work ethic, and I know how hard you go for the kingdom. As I like to say in my urban, you go hard for the kingdom, right? So your ability to maintain that diligence toward work and towards kingdom work specifically, on the backside of, you know, what could have been a turn to investment banking or a turn to Wall Street, or, you know, like, talk a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
Sure. I think it's good to have followers of Jesus in all walks of life and in all different industries, whether it's on Wall Street or in entrepreneurship or in education or public service and government. We see just how important it is to have people of integrity, of character, of selflessness in public office. And so I think there's a certain mentality at some of these schools where maybe it's a little bit unhealthy, where you're seeking the brand name to a degree where it's the marker of success. It's like, oh, which firms did you interview with, or which companies are giving you an offer, and that becomes the signature of your worth. And I think it's easy to be, you know, when you're in an ocean that, you know, it's all water, it's hard to even imagine what's like to be on land, right? And so I think if you, it is really hard to go against the current in those situations where everyone else is talking about, if you're associated with either working this kind of job or with this kind of individual or this leader or this company, that somehow you are aligned with the reflected glory, right?
Sure.
And
sure.
I think that's a really important concept for especially you people who are entering the workforce for the first time. It's like you are, you know, it's who you pick and what company you pick to align yourself with will very much shape who you are and how you think. And so when you're interviewing for a job, they are trying to see if you're a good fit for them, but you also need to be thinking and really evaluating whether the environment and the leaders that you're working with, or your manager, are they going to be a good influence on you and your life?
Sure. And if you can, Josh, talk a little bit about, you know, the gathering, because that's also another representation of people who have similar goals, similar DNA, if you will, similar cultural values, core values toward the kingdom. And I know I'm not asking you to get into too much detail about the behind the scenes of the gathering, but for those who are listening to us or who are watching us, who are familiar with the gathering, can you talk a little bit about its mission and what you do to serve those you serve on a daily basis?
Sure. Yeah. So the gathering is a community of Christian givers who come together to learn from each other, right? And then to learn from trusted experts how to be wiser stewards of all the resources that God's given to them and entrusted to their care, right? And so it's primarily through the lens of philanthropy, but it also includes your private wealth. It includes your reputation, your relationships, the platform that you have in your local city. How do you be wise stewards of those resources? And so we've been around for over 30 years. Mm-hmm. We've had people raise their kids in this community and then raise their grandkids in this community. I think one of the things that holds it together is that people want, and these are people who are giving, you know, in excess of $200,000 a year to Christian causes at a minimum. And you think these are some of these people are incredibly successful in the business world, right? They started businesses that have generated enough income where they're giving significantly out of that, right? And so what brings them together and why would they invest their time in these peer relationships? And it goes back to what we were saying earlier, is like you find strength through friendships. And there are times when you need to be challenged about some of the values that you proclaim, that you say that you uphold, and I think you need to be held into account. I know that's a couple of the values that you have with this new podcast that you're launching, and it's about generosity. But it's easy to say, "Hey, I'm going to be generous," and then not actually who's actually holding you accountable to being generous,
yeah.
Right? You need to have both the value of generosity, but then also the value of accountability. I'd say that there are parts of the gathering that allow you to ask questions and to be honest about your lack of knowledge or you're wrestling with some tensions. There are lots of gray areas in this world, and there are lots of really good competing opportunities. And so you just figure out, okay, how do I spend my time? How do I spend my resources for the kind of kingdom impact that would be meaningful? And you can do that in a place where you have friends that will help you pursue these questions, and you have trust with them so that you can be honest and reveal some of the challenges that you face.
You know, one of the most, you know, unique things I, you know, like literally bringing it back into perspective of our topic, you know, that work actually requires work. Think about the number of people who are a part of the experience of the gathering, Josh, who and the eyes of many people around them, they have arrived, mm-hmm. right? They've earned a right to be at the gathering. You know, so these are significant philanthropists, people who have very generous hearts, they're very generous givers, and yet they're not necessarily putting it on autopilot. They're working even harder, right, to actually make an impact on the kingdom. They're working even harder so that they have more resources to actually give away and to impact lives. And so talk a little bit about that dichotomy in our world, if you will, of on the one hand, you have a culture that says work hard, and then retire and go play golf. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I like to say don't retire, refire, you know. Uh-huh. And so we have a community like yourself, like me, who I don't think we plan on retiring, not in its traditional sense, right, ever, mm-hmm. but we will always do what we can to impact the kingdom. And again, the people mm-hmm. you serve with at the gathering on a daily basis, same mm-hmm. thing. Talk about that dichotomy in our world, Josh, of the people who, you know, their number one aim is to get up, so, you know, and go to work purely for the sake of going to play golf one day for 20, 30 years after they retire versus this community who really works hard mm-hmm. so that they can keep working hard, mm-hmm. oddly enough, to make an impact on the kingdom.
Yeah, yeah. I think it goes back to purpose, right? What is the purpose that we've been given? You know, if we think of life itself as a privilege, mm-hmm. it's a mystery, right? I don't know how I got here. I don't know how I was so fortunate that God breathed life into my body. Like, that so blows my mind. And I sort of feel like I better make the best use of the time that I have. And this is maybe a danger that a trap that I fall into, but I want to maximize everything, right? I want to play and have as much fun as I can. I want to work as hard as I can. I want to enjoy my family as much as I can. And I want to there's no finish line in that sense that there's no, hey, I'm done, right? Like, that's in terms of being on purpose and on mission with God and for God. That's different from a finishing line for your financial planning, right? That's different, right? So if you sort of like make sort of good financial planning, you're like, okay, this is what I need for retirement. This is what I need to take care of my family, my kids, my health, and how to have something to give away. That's a different finish line. I think when people think of like, oh, work, I'm going to be done at 65, I'm going to be done at 50. I want to be, to me, that's more arbitrary. Maybe like what you're thinking about is you're done with that particular role mm-hmm. or maybe with that particular company, but that's God's not done with you. And you know, right. He's got more for you to do.
Absolutely.
He's got more relationships for you to be connected to. He's got more people for you to meet and to be salt to and to be light to. So to me, that's the beauty of it is that all of this is work in the sense of having purpose in life and having how do you fill your days? Some of that's for a paycheck. But if you don't think about it as just a paycheck, it's like, okay, well, God's placed me in conversation with Anthony today. It's going to be with a supplier tomorrow. It's going to be with a vendor. It's going to be with a new hire. These are all opportunities, and that's, you know, you can call it work, but it's really opportunity to be on purpose with God for God.
Sure. So Josh, a slight term, but still relevant on topic. tell us a little bit about your success. What are some of the things you've had to do outside of what we can see on your resume in mm-hmm. order to be successful? You know, again, bringing it back to, man, work requires work. So, mm-hmm. there are some things you've had to do to get to where you are. Again, things that are invisible to us, things we can't see on your resume or on your bio. Talk a little bit about that for us.
I think it's, again, you know, I'm biased because my personality type is to go very broad mm-hmm. and to have a wide range of interests. And I think the sparks of creativity happen when one industry comes into contact with another, or when somebody in one field gets plopped into a very different environment and sees that environment with a new lens. Mm-hmm. And I think you can add a lot of value to your institution, to your organization, whether it's a church, a company, a school, your peers, your coworkers, if you have something to offer that's outside of the silo that you're working in. If you're on a team and you're on a marketing team, but you bring your gifts of music, or you giving your gifts of art, or you happen to be really great at operations management, or whatever the thing is that you have a passion for, you have a curious mind about, and that's when I think that's outside of work that you cultivate. But then you bring it into work because it's part of who you are and part of what you're interested in, and you see the world in a different way. I think it's I think that's where, like, when you think of step functions of change in an industry or a new innovation for a company, sometimes it comes from people who are working or thinking orthogonally to where everyone else is going.
That's good. What misconception do you believe people have about success in work? You know, some people say, you know, some people believe it's a matter of luck, right? Mm-hmm. Or that people mm-hmm. are born into wealth, mm-hmm. or, hey, Josh, you got into Harvard because, you know, yeah. What are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, success will make you happy, right? That's probably a fallacy. It's not necessarily the success itself, because there's always going to be more. There's always going to be someone more, bigger, better, faster, stronger. And I think I've learned that, you know, we talked about Harvard earlier. Like, I learned that going to Harvard, I went to in my class, there were people who were like literally world champions at their mm-hmm. sport or in their field, or, you know, I was like, you can be a big fish in a small pond and think you're successful. Mm-hmm. But if that's the measure of what drives you to be happy, like, you'll very quickly find failure. And so then it goes back to, like, what is it that gives you a sense of purpose and worth? Mm-hmm. Where do you find worth? That's a question that's like an existential question. That's a very personal question. That's a question that sort of it evolves over time. But those are things that happen outside of work that allow you to flourish in work.
So what are some of the things that you would say, maybe one or two things that, as you think about your life, your career, and just maintaining consistency, right? So I know you to be very disciplined, even though you're very fun and loving. And people may not know from this podcast, but let me tell y'all, Josh is literally one of the funniest guys I've ever met in my life. Like, I've never been around Josh and not laughed like crazy. So he keeps me laughing all the time. And I haven't done a good job of pulling that out of you on this podcast, but definitely, I think your second career, you could have been a comedian easily. So, but talk a little bit about, Josh, like, what are some, maybe one or two things that you found that, man, throughout my career, I've had to really work hard to be consistent here, you know, because a lot of people, right, their feeling of not being successful, even though many of them are, their feeling of not being successful is associated with maybe having a thing or two in their lives that they just can't seem to get right, if you will. Mm. And I think, you know, giving yourself the grace that you can't be perfect, right? But mm-hmm. so there, for some of us, there's something that we may spend you may spend a lifetime, you know, mm-hmm. just working through that. Is there anything for you that you can think of where you go, man, just because of how God built me, because of how God wired me, this is something that in order to be where I am today, I've always had to work on this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Anthony, so my first job out of college was I was a newspaper reporter.
Oh, wow.
And one of the reasons I love being a newspaper reporter was that each day was going to be different. You never know. You didn't know stepping into the office what was going to happen, what story you were going to be assigned. One day you'd be asked to cover a forest fire, and I'd never been to a forest fire before. And what happens in a forest, like, you know, or going to a city council meeting, or, you know, and it was to me, the endless variety was exciting and enticing. Mm. What is hard about daily journalism is that you have to produce each day, right? There's a daily deadline, and then the next day, there's nobody remembers what you did yesterday. You have to do it again. I think for me, for my personality type and how God built me, right? It's like, I want the endlessly fun, the wide diversity and give me the broadest range of experiences. Give me the new. And I've struggled with actually, you know, to be successful, you know, there's other studies that have shown you need the 10,000 hours of grinding to perfect that art, right? Of doing the same thing over and over and over again until you really get, you're a craftsman at your work.
Sure.
And so that discipline of repetition and of practice, you know, we hear of athletes, some athletes are grinders and they just love practice. They just shoot over and over. They run the same drills over and over. And then there's others who are like, hey, look, just put me in the game. I'm ready to go. Practice, right? Let me give you a specific example of this. I've stolen this analogy from somebody else, but I love it so much, and I'm going to use it here. Is there's a discipline to reading scripture every day, right? And you're putting solid substance. This is the fuel that you need to go through life. You know, there's like you have to fill yourself. You have to fill your stores with the truth of scripture. And how do you do that? Well, maybe spend one weekend to blow through the whole Bible. No, it's like you have to do it every day. And it's the repetition. It's the consistency. It's the dedicating, setting aside time to do it. And where the analogy comes in, so I grew up in another era when people used to put money into savings accounts, right? So it wasn't 0% interest. Like you actually get something each month. There'd be a little line item like interest paid this month. And it would grow because the interest would add back to the principal. And then on the principal, you get a little bit more interest on, right? So you see this number build over time. And I think that's what adding a little bit of scripture in your life each day, each and every day, you're going to get compound interest on the most valuable thing on earth. And that's the truth that comes from scripture. And you need to let that principle build with compound interest. So, you know, if I read the Bible 2 years from now, it's not going to have the time to marinate and soak and build and sort of change my life if I do it today. Right.
Sure.
So, you know, there's like the concept of time value of money. Right. So a dollar today is more valuable than a dollar a year from now.
Sure.
A dollar today you can build on with interest. And so it'll be worth $1.10, $1.20. And that same concept of like, okay, this scripture, let it sink and take root in your life today. A year from now, you're going to be a more mature, wiser person, a person with better relationships in your life. And you know, it's not the prosperity gospel. It's got the wisdom gospel, right? Wisdom is something that you can say, hey, give me more of that. God has promised me wisdom if I sit with him, right? He hasn't promised me cash or a great job or a wonderful, it's, you know, whatever it is that you want in life, but you do get wisdom and that does get compounded.
So I think I'm hearing you say in summary that, you know, you have such an, and I know this to be true about you have such an appreciation for multiple disciplines. And yet you try to balance that, you know, you've essentially spent your life trying to balance that appreciation for multiple disciplines with trying to master a craft, right? And so there's this tension that lives, that you've had to live in that space. And I think, and to your point, a lot of people who are probably listening here, there's a similar tension. For a lot of people, you know, one of the greatest challenges for high capacity leaders, successful people, is there's a reason they're there, right? They have the option for multiple options, multiple disciplines. And so that's a great challenge. I'm going to ask you two more questions, man. And we could spend, believe it or not, we've already spent almost 40 minutes together. It's crazy to think. But one, what final advice would you offer someone about the importance of hard work? And the value of diligence in light of what you just shared, like On one hand, Josh has an appreciation for multiple disciplines, and yet Josh has also known that in order to be, you know, definitively successful long term at something, he's had to laser in and put in his 10,000 hours. So what advice would you give somebody who's living on the fence of that tension right now?
Well, you know, so a friend of mine who you and I both know, and this is a friend who's been able to speak truth to me in areas of my weakness. And he's told me, Josh, like, how can you live a life where people can rely on you? How do you be a reliable person? And I hadn't really thought of reliability as a core of virtue, right? But when you think about hard work, if you work really hard and you deliver on the promises and the tasks that people ask you to do, you become reliable, you become trustworthy, and you get more responsibility. So I think of like a young person, you might be at the very bottom of the totem pole, you might be the intern, but if you're reliable and you reliably deliver on the things that you've been asked to do, even if they're small, you're gonna be entrusted with more and more. And so I think about hard work. Well, hard work is a key component of being reliable. Because you're like, okay, well, I'm too busy. Like for me, I'm like, I'm too busy learning about new things. And I'm, you know, oh, that's boring. That's the repetitive work. No, it's building on the foundation of reliability.
That's powerful.
And so that's an area where I need, you know, so people who've worked with me, if they ever listen to this podcast, they'd be like, oh my goodness, Josh, like, who are you to be talking about some of these things? And so these are areas where I need a lot of work. Like even now, like in my career for like 20 some years now, and I still need to be working on consistency, on finding constraints within my work schedule so I can try to get things done that people have asked me to do or that I need to do to if we're working together as a team, every single person has to be getting their stuff done so they can be reliable and then move on to the next thing.
That's powerful. That's very powerful, actually. Yeah, thank you. And I capture that as one of my three takeaways from you. So here's my last question for you, and then I'll essentially do a quick wrap up for us here. So tell us three weird, interesting, or fun facts about Josh. Weird, interesting, or fun. Anything that comes to mind. About Josh Kwan.
Well, I've already told you I want to be a scientist when I grew up, and that's not that strange because so people who are watching the YouTube, they can tell I'm Asian. So there are like I, in so many ways I've lived like to an extreme, like the Asian stereotypes, right? Oh. Like played a musical instrument. Maybe did a sport that didn't involve any physical harm that could come from it, right? So I know you and your son played football, and no way my parents would ever let me play football.
which is also typical of my culture too, by the way, right?
And I love the fact that your son is going to be a blend. He is studying Mandarin. He's playing football. It's awesome. Yeah. I love how multicultural he is. But I was like, okay, well, there are things I wanted to do that were like really different from the stereotypes of my culture. And one of those, like, I took up wrestling in high school. I was not a very good wrestler, but that took me to the most uncomfortable places you can imagine, not just physically, but being alone in the ring.
Yeah.
It's just you and your opponent.
Oh, wow.
And that's terrifying, right?
Wow. I didn't know you wrestled. That's definitely a fun fact for me. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was, super scared. I didn't break 100 pounds until high school. And so I was steel, stick. But I loved wrestling because it was like so different and non-traditional for me. But it pushed me really hard in different ways. And
sure.
I know, that's one thing that... what else is there? My wife and my kids make fun of me all the time, and you can see I have all these books, but I don't have a chance to read them. so don't ask me about any of these titles. I like the idea of reading books.
Look, I'm not letting you off. I know you to be a well-studied, very well-studied guy. So somehow I don't know if you're reading the synopses or what, but you're getting it in, buddy. So, because So, but man, thank you so much for your time. And so, a quick summary for me is, and again, you said you dropped a lot of powerful gems and nuggets, but I heard you say when you live on purpose, there is no finish line, right? So, in other words, some people get up every day and look for the finish line. They're living for, working for the finish line. But when you live life on purpose, you remove the finish line. It keeps getting pushed back, at least, or you create a different finish line. And so, very powerful thought. Also, the importance of being diverse is, you know, I heard you say have a concentration, but also bring additional value outside of work. And that's a powerful thought that, you know, one of the things I tell my team all the time is, you know, as you get better, we get better, you know, or as you get better, the environment we're in and the environment you're in gets better. And so better yourself. And I'm big on that, Josh. I'm not big on just bringing value to work faith, but I'm really big on bringing value to yourself, because the more value you bring to yourself, then ultimately you'll bring additional value to work faith. So we definitely have that perspective. So continue to work on being diverse. And then finally, man, be reliable, be reliable. So, and how really shifting your thought to reliability. And actually, man, I associated that with stewardship, right? Because when you think about doing your job every day with the understanding of reliability in mind, that you're stewarding the relationships that are around you, that people are counting on you. And not only are you stewarding the gifts and the talents you have for the kingdom, but you're also stewarding, you know, the idea of those relationships that God has blessed you to have and the people that God has called you to walk with on a daily basis. So very powerful stuff, man. So, but thank you so much for joining us today. And look, as a shameless plug for Work Faith Connection, for anybody who's watching, who's listening, look, I just want to tell you that this year we're launching some new academy courses. Some of our topics and themes include professionalism, time management, overcoming stress, dealing with difficult people. So regardless of where you are in your career, you can log on to workfaith.org and find enhancement in your career. We have literally had PhDs and people with MBAs, and we've had, you know, people who are looking to just simply re-enter the workforce coming out of prison, and they're trying to make 12, 13 bucks an hour. So believe it or not, we have an array of training that really can impact whoever you are, wherever you are in your life and your career. And so I want to put that shameless plug in for Work Faith. I want to thank you, Josh, for being with us. And then also, I look forward to our time together next week as we journey together to come to talk about our next topic. And I actually thought I had our next topic right beside me, but unfortunately I don't. So I'm just going to ask our audience to make sure you tune in or check out our website so that you can actually discover what our next topic and who our next speaker is going to be next week. So Josh, man, thank you so much for your time. It's always an honor to be with you, brother. I know your time is valuable. So I really appreciate you. And I look forward to keeping you plugged into our community here.
Thank you, Anthony. It's a privilege.
Absolutely, man. Blessings to you and your family, and we'll be in touch very soon, brother. Thanks again.
Thanks so much for listening to the Work Faith Podcast. Make sure to tune in next time for more conversation around how to find fulfillment through the intersection of work and faith. Now, go make the day amazing.